All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Chris Front Podcast. My name is Maya. I'm your host. And back today with actually my first ever Australian guest on this podcast. Very, very excited to have with me today, Hanny J. Hanny, thanks for joining us from Melbourne, 10 hours ahead. How are you doing? And welcome to the podcast.
I'm great. Yeah, thank you. It's exciting. It's nice to see you.
Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit, kind of what you do?
Yeah, sure. My name's Hanny J. I play bass in a band called Clowns from Melbourne. And I also do solo stuff under the name just Hanny J as well. And I've been a musician for like doing that for like 15 years now, or nearly 16
wow.
years.
So. It's incredible. I mean, yeah, let's dive straight in and talk about music more. So, I mean, for starters, how did you get started like 15 years ago?
Well, I reckon I kind of got started at school. Like I started playing guitar when I was 7. And my dad taught me how to play, and I kind of had it in my mind that I wanted to be in a band pretty early on. I think my big brother was into bands, and like we were into it together, and we wanted to play in a band together. So around like 13-14, I started like my first band at school, and that's when I was got super determined to like do it for real. And I was grew up in a really small country town, so there was no scene of any kind and no shows anywhere. Probably literally one show a year, and they'd have like a park benefit show or something. So I knew I had to like get out and go to the closest kind of city we had. But that's probably like I moved there. I left school and moved to Brisbane to start my first band when I was 15 to do that. Yeah.
Very cool. And what happened then? What was that first band like?
So yeah, like my brother had already, he moved to Brisbane. Like everyone went to Brisbane, or, you know, the first week, I guess, like 2 hours from the country, and he was already there, and I'd written like 8 songs, and I knew he was there. And a guy, like our friend, he was basically like my brother, my second brother, was always there as well. And he played bass. So I remember sitting in art class and just being like, I gotta get out of here. And I've got songs. I'm like, I've got a band waiting for me in the city. It's really, not like I'm too good for this place.
No, I get it.
It was more just like so itchy to get out. And I felt like no one else, like all the kids were like, fuck this. Like if we could get out, we would. And then when I actually chose to do it, they were like, don't do that. Like no one does that. It's like, got to stay in school. And I was like, no way. So I started playing. I can't remember how I got my first gig, but I remember our first gig, and I was just like 15 because I was still 14 when we moved there, and they like let me play and then kicked me out straight away because I was underage. Fun. But like, really fun. I got used to that really quickly, and like the security guards would hate the punk shows. They'd like get the fuck out. It's like, fine, I get it. Like, but yeah, that's when I think, yeah, we played our first show like March that year in 2004 or something.
Honestly, that's so much cooler than my story. Like my very first band was a Green Day cover band with my friends, which is still fun. But, you know, I wholeheartedly can admit today that, you know, we sucked so bad and I felt so ashamed because I knew that we sucked. But deep down, I also knew that everybody sucks, and you've got to suck to not suck.
No. Well, that wasn't my first band. Like my first band was that high school band, and that was like it was back to the basics with an X. And we did a cover of Linkin Park, and my poor little friend Will, who played drums, like he couldn't come back in. So if we fucked up, he'd have to go like 1, 2, 3, 4, and we have to start from the beginning of the song. And we were so bad. We'd jam in his garage. And I remember he had mice, like pet mice. And they were like, they'd be in there. And I'm like, this isn't good. Like, they shouldn't be in this. Like, I feel really bad about that to this day. But we were like tiny. But yeah, that was my first band. So I'm totally with you. I think everyone's first band's always around that age, and everyone has a shithouse name, except for Jared and Thumbs. He has, his band was called Paranoid, and they were like really cool. And I'm like, have you just always been cool? Like, it's not fair.
And I guess, how was the journey, or like, what were the big milestones of how you got from that point to, you know, being in a professional full-time touring band with, you know, pretty good success?
Yeah, I feel like every band I was in from like 15 to when I met the guys, every band had that dream, and I was trying to push it to do that. And it's so hard to get everybody on the same page and be willing to and be good, yeah. You know, and keep it good and keep the momentum going and record and write and have money to do stuff, let alone if you have partners or kids or anything. So I feel like I wanted to tour like that since I was probably 12, and it wasn't until I was yet 27 that I met them. Wow. And meeting, yeah, four other people that were actually putting their whole lives on the line and taking it that seriously. It was just like so exciting.
It's incredible. Yeah. I fully relate, and it's I didn't ever really get to the point of finding the right people for a band. I really tried hard, and I, you know, I spent years and years and years just circling through people to play with, you know, back in the day, and, you know, did some touring here and there, but nothing really ever came of anything. And honestly, the way I ended up on the crew and business side of music was really because I just wanted to tour more and like have more control over that versus having to ask for people if they're also available. Do you know what I mean?
I totally get that. And I think you'd probably see a side of respect for bands that you want to advocate for and be that person.
Yeah. And so, yeah, ended up in crew jobs and realized that between us, I'm a lot better in the crew jobs than I'm at the instrument. I'm a passable guitar player. I can do the bass fine. And it's good enough for like your average rock punk kind of band. But it doesn't go beyond that. So I'm a lot better on the crew side. And that's where, as the people say, I found my calling.
Yeah, that's great. I think you got to go through certain things, like, obviously, and do it that way. And I think when you're really young and you got so much energy to do things the hard way sometimes, if you don't have the right connections or production or sound, you know, and you can just burn out and not reach that point, and before you reach that point you're just like over it. And so many people said to me, like, I'm giving it up, like, because they're just sick of slugging it out and playing, you know, smaller shows. And I think you can get in that, it's so easy to fall into that, not necessarily like a rut, because like there's something wrong with playing around bars every weekend. And I used to do that and play every weekend or twice a weekend in Brisbane at the same places. And it did start getting just like stagnant though, like it was like no one's fucking coming to these shows, and you know, it needs to be more venues, like population. It just became so apparent that like playing in a bigger place like Melbourne was just so much better.
how was the decision to, you know, take the plunge and do the first big tours in Clowns for you? I mean, I think the band was going before you joined already, right?
Yeah, I was lucky. It's like I came in just as stuff got better for them. Like they'd been slugging it out for a very long time since they were 19. So I met them when they were 25. Right. Yeah, and when I joined, we went to Europe 3 times that year, like 2017. When they asked me, they're like, hey, do you want to join? We're going to Europe. We're doing Australia like 3 times. Well, and there was like, there was so much.
Were you like,
Yeah,
I guess for people, sometimes when sort of the dream materializes, they actually get very overwhelmed when it really happens, and then you actually need to commit, and all of a sudden you've got these commitments and it's big money on the line and all these things, you know, going to Europe 3 times around the world, you know, it's a lot of money and a lot of being very far away from family and not being able to fly back if something happens on a whim. And
Yeah.
did you get overwhelmed, or was it like just go?
I think I was so excited about it. And it felt really real. It didn't feel like crazy surreal that I was like anxious. It just felt like finally I was like, it was kind of what I expected at the same time somehow. Like just the realness of it. Because of that, we were still like sleeping on floors heaps then and not really ever staying in. We didn't stay in motels at all, or anything. So our van didn't have aircon and
Fun.
stuff. And I was just like, I'm like shivering on the floor in the UK and just being so happy and being like, yes, like, and just the everyday, like traveling that way and getting to see different scenes every day and play a different venue every day. But it's like punk venues and like-minded people. But and just when you think you've met like the nicest person ever, you just like meet somebody else that just blows your mind. You're like, whoa, there's so good people, like there's so many good people that exist in the world. And it just, and I also love it breaks down like stereotypes that you've just been around without even noticing it or have subconsciously just from the media and what wherever you've lived and everyone around you talking to you about what overseas is like. And you just got to experience it yourself if you can, if it's like, and I just felt so grateful really to be doing it like the whole time. And I always do every
That's so
time.
wonderful. I was wondering though, you know, Clowns being one of the only Australian bands sort of that size touring overseas that often and so successfully, and I've been seeing your shows for like friggin' 7 8 years at this point. Is actually I was telling you about it when I saw you at the show, and it's funny how
So
long it's
cool.
been. I think I saw you play at Ninos Fest in southern Germany so long ago, and like a bunch of really good shows. But anyways, like I guess how do you make those things work financially, especially going over like multiple times? And obviously, I understand from a business standpoint, going over so often makes sense because you actually build something up, you know. And you have something to build off of each time, but I guess what is your budgeting like, and like crewing situation like, and sort of how do you make those things work?
Yeah, it's like everything we do goes back into the band. Like we do pay ourselves, but I mean, we really kind of like all of us have other jobs as well. The boys have been working really hard on like the label the last few years, but before the label existed, it was like Jake worked for his mom for like 8 years to support the band, and that was really lucky, you know, to be able to like work for family. Or me and Stevie have worked like a lot of office jobs to support it, and we're probably the ones that have had the most like turnover. So yeah, I really think it's just like sacrificing because we could do that, but yeah, it's always going back into like recording, or that's why we also have to go for such long periods of time to cover the costs. And yeah, but really lucky to be in the position to do it like what you're saying as often, because just bands before that, it's like, yeah, to get to that point, it's like, how are we going to do this like in our
Yeah,
position?
like I've genuinely always wondered that. That's why I'm asking. You know, I was always impressed with how active you were, you know, all around Europe. And are there any plans to sort of go beyond that as well? Like, do you want to sort of break into the American market as well, or
Into
into
the,
the
sorry.
American market?
Yeah, like we had so much planned for 2020 in the States, and we had like a showcase thing in LA, and we'd signed to Fat Records. So I don't know when we're gonna be able to go back. Like we don't have plans yet, but yeah, definitely. we're trying to kind of like work on that at the moment over the next 6 months
Hell
or
yeah,
whatever.
clowns world takeover. We love to see it.
Yeah. I miss
So you don't just play in a band, you also have a solo project under your name, Hattie J. It's fairly in a lot of ways it has a lot of, I feel like, fairly similar sentiment and like ideas in the music, but obviously the execution is a lot different. It's just you. I was wondering how is that for you, running a solo project? And like, do you feel like it's just a good way to throw in song ideas that didn't make it into the band, or like what is the
Yeah,
background to that?
like it's super separate because they found out about me doing that stuff because I kind of started doing just me like 2013 like live, but I'd always written forever by myself anyway. But the clown stuff is totally like group and also Stevie and Jake a lot of the time. Like Stevie writes a lot of that. So I've always like not been good at writing in a group situation. I was like very personal. Like if you've listened to any of the solo stuff, you know, it's very like
It is,
emotive
yeah.
and about feelings and how to write to keep sane, really, to process what's going on in my head and kind of figure it out. It's really cathartic. So I think it's like very different to me. But yeah, I guess I've probably just without even meaning to, or like just brought a little bit of that to the clowns thing. But I feel like it. I'm sure if I do, it's hard for me to be objective sometimes
Fair
with
enough. What is, I was
it.
wondering, what is your creative routine like writing? I mean, you've said you've written regularly for, decades at this stage. But yeah, what does your routine look like? Do you have certain things like, I don't know, I know some artists that, have a rule like one song a month, or they have different sort of ways of flexing the creative muscle. Do you do any of those
Yeah.
things?
Honestly, I feel like when I try to make myself do something like that, or kind of not trick myself to do something, but get a routine, I just shut off to it. So it's always been like I'm not a theory person. It's always been like a feeling, like especially when I go walking, I just get like one line in my head and like write a whole song around that line, and it would just kind of sum up an emotion I was feeling about something. And when I nailed it, I just like, yes, like it just feels like it was like closure or something for how it's feeling in my head. So that would just happen, and especially like if something shit had happened, you know, it's always that thing of like it's gonna be a great album after this
Just
terrible
working
breakup.
it through,
Like
yeah.
it's so true. But then you know, I've been really happy, and the same things happen. Yeah, I think it's just when you feel something so strongly, and like I feel like when I felt really bad, like nothing else can. I'm like, that's it. Like, I feel so shit. I'm not like, I can't feel shitter than this. That's when it's just this liberating, like, awesome feeling. And there's nowhere else but up. And I'm just gonna put it all in this song and like stay up drinking till 6 a.m. and recording this in a back room, which isn't very healthy. But
Does it
yeah.
kind of come in waves a little bit though? Like, I mean, obviously the feelings do,
Yeah.
but my question is more about do you sort of those lines and the ability to put a song together, like, does it come easier to you, sort of the technical side? Sometimes, or do you sometimes deal with like writer's blocks, or yeah, how's that?
Yeah, I feel like sometimes, like over the years, like it's gone. And just like, I remember calling my dad once and being like, that's it. Like, I think I can write more. And he's like, it always comes back. And like, it does. I think it's just like, it just depends, especially with clowns. Like, we have a deadline when we write. So when we do a record, we'll be like, kind of, we've learned like that works really well for us. And I've learned so much like writing for myself through writing with them. It's been so great because it'll feel like that there's some nights and we just be like, this part, like we just need it and like we just can't get it. And then something will happen and it just like happens and everyone's like, yeah, like it's like the
it's incredible. Honestly, I miss that so much. Like I was mentioning earlier how, you know, I came into music from playing in bands as well, and I have never once found a replacement for that high again of like writing a song, bringing that skeleton to the group, and then the group magic making that into a thing that works, and then like the song slowly like folds itself into like 3D and everybody's having their best time, and then all of a sudden you're out on tour somewhere on the other side of the world or whatever playing that song to people, and like they feel some kind of way about it. Like nothing beats that, you know. I've genuinely never found you know anything that replaced that.
It's like so fun to me when I can get in the zone and like writing. I can't compare it to any other feeling like of anything else. Great.
It's wonderful. I mean, God, I would love to actually be in a band again, but I also know that there's no way that I could actually do that with the time that I have. Like I would, you know, I would totally be that person that I would have hated back in the day in terms of like, you know, I'm barely home. I'm always gone for something. I've always got another meeting to do. I've always got to go to work. Yeah. I'm
ironically the calm person.
It's what it is.
I know. Yeah. It's funny now, like when I feel tired. And I remember being like 18, you know, 20, and being like, I'm never going to be tired, like doing this stuff, like this old fucking, like old people. I'm like, here it comes, what they always say.
There you are. Yeah, I mean, I am just 26 and I feel it in my bones. Let me tell you that. Like,
you're in starts then. You're like, I'm not even old.
Yeah, it's like at 26, you should feel pretty fucking good, but, you know, like honestly, all the touring jobs just knock it out of me. Like last summer, last summer I developed my first hip problems. That's fun, and it really does take a toll.
Yeah, you'll be wearing like orthotics soon, like special shoes.
I feel it's not that far away. Yeah. Speaking of tour health, do you have any, I guess, what does your typical tour day look like, you know?
It depends if, like, we just did that little bus tour of, like, 2 weeks and we'd never go on a big bus, so that was pretty unique to have a bed and be able to sleep. So I'll go with the first, like, the normal touring for us, like, in a Sprinter van. We'd usually stay either in accommodation at the pub or something, or like stay at a little motel, and we'd have like lobby call at 11. So we all like meet and then jump in the van, most likely for 6 hours or more, 5 to 8 hours, then drive straight to the venue and usually do a sound check straight away. And then it's probably like 5 by the time we finish that or something. And then there's usually like, it's awesome in Germany or like in Europe, and they'll make dinner for you, and it's usually like 6:30 or 7, so you might have like half an hour to kill. So sometimes there's not enough time to leave the venue and go see stuff, because like you'll have to be there anyway. And then doors are usually like 7 or something or 8, so one of us will go do the merch, and we take turns to do the merch, and then we play and it's over. And then we'll pack up stuff and pack a little merch. And then if we have the van, we have more freedom. So like we can go do stuff, like, cause we are TMing ourselves. So we don't usually party that much, cause like there's just no really time. And I think now we've learned if we have to get up at like 5 a.m. like sometimes we have to get up way before the lobby call anyway, so it's that and like Stevie's voice and our voices, like we can't really, we burned it out too quickly. You know, people are paying money for nothing and there's no point doing the tour. So it's kind of like forcing you to look after yourself.
I guess that's kind of what I'm
I think.
getting at, the or like what I'm interested in, the part of looking after yourself. And I'm honestly asking from, personal interest. I don't think there's the one answer to keeping healthy whilst, doing long tours, but especially when it's van tours and you spend most of your day in a metal can with, the driest air with a bunch of other people. But I guess, do you have any routines in the very limited time you've got every day to like, do you go for a walk or for a run or anything like that?
I did a bit of that in the last tour. I was trying to be more conscious of that because I think I can definitely just sleep as much as I can and won't get up and kind of be active. So I think I'm transitioning a bit into doing that more. But it's definitely hard to kind of like not drink on tour. And I think a lot of people get into that rut just to, if you're tired, you know, it's like a quick stimulant, but it's a slippery
Oh,
slope
yeah.
because if you just do that every day, it's gonna make you sick or run down. So like we all, Stevie is really, really good with vitamins, and he will get like the vitamins out when we all jump in the van, like hand them out. And we're like, we all eat pretty well. Like we were like, I'm like veggie vegan, but they like we all were, but they're all kind of eating meat now, I think. I think I'm the only one. But like, yeah, we all eat pretty well, pretty conscious of that. And I think a big one is just like mental health and communication in the band. And we're like, it's a miracle to me that like five people can get along like we do, and we just don't have like fights, and we really like love each other a lot. So that makes a huge, like that just makes like the world of difference. Like I don't know how bands travel this tightly when they don't get along,
It's honestly, for being
if they're not
together that
making milk.
long, both like as a band and also for how long the tours are and how far away from home that is, that's a big achievement. I mean, I've definitely seen bands not get along with each other whatsoever, and it's wonderful. Like, what are I guess, are there any particular sort of conflict resolution strategies that you have?
Yeah, I feel like from an outsider's perspective, something I really respect about them, especially Stevie and Jake, because like they're the ones that have been in it from start, but just them, the amount that they've traveled over so many years. Oh, sorry. You can just see like it's kind of an, without even trying, it's just this kind of solutions focused like viewpoint of everything. Like nothing escalates because there's no need for it to, and it wouldn't help anyone if you're stressed. Like we've definitely, you know, everyone gets stressed, and like I've definitely been like, wow, and Steve's like, hey, chill out. Like the worst fight we ever had wasn't even a fight, it's just a moment. It was when like it was the first tour actually like 5 years ago, and there was like this awesome homemade hummus, and I was saving some for breakfast because like that's what we were eating, kind of like stuff from the shows. And I came out and I thought I had time, and Stevie was like scooping up the last bit with his finger like out of the bowl, and like he doesn't use fucking cutlery. And I was just like, I was gonna eat that, and he was just like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, duh. I was like walked away, and that's about as heated as I got. So yeah, it's funny.
That's pretty
But I think,
harmless, so.
yeah, exactly. We're all just like lovely. I think we're all like the similar people that, and that by chance, you know, it just happened, which is really lucky.
That's wonderful. I mean, I'm so used to hearing stories that are, wildly different to that, and that's incredible. Yeah, that's really, really incredible.
Yeah, I always get whenever I get like, I always end up talking about it, and I'm just like, it blows my mind. And just at the time when I met them all, I was like having a bit of a hard time, like in my relationship at the time, and I did feel a bit just in a rut. And it was like these four people just showed up and were able to kind of be this catalyst for me to can move out of that situation, which is great. It just happened that way. And we didn't know each other like at all. Like I'd heard of clowns, but we'd never met. So I was like, I hope I get along with these guys. And we just
And
like
then you just
hit
did. Like that. Hey, what are some items that you wouldn't ever go to without? Or like, my usual question is more like, what's in your pelly? But I know as a musician, a pelly is not necessarily.
I got essentials,
Yeah, but like,
food essentials.
what are your essentials?
Okay, first thing, like wet
Yes.
wipes, for sure. For sure. Oh my God. I'm gonna say vitamins, but it's so bad because I'm so bad at taking them, but it is really important. Magnesium, especially like for your muscles and your joints. I'm blanking. I reckon heaps of undies.
Not a bad idea.
Clean sock. No, I've managed to like every time I go to pack though, I'm like, oh, I've done this like so many times, but it's still so hard to pack 6 weeks of stuff into a backpack. And the bands we were just on tour with had like ports, like big like suitcases and stuff. I'm like, God, must be so awesome. They're like, you don't have suitcases? I'm like, no, kidding
Do you have
me.
suitcases by now, though?
No, we always take backpacks because we're always in like a van. So our merch is always in the van with us. So we stuff our backpacks under the seat.
Fair enough.
I feel like I'm missing, I reckon, snacks too.
That's a good one.
Peanut butter pretzel, I'm gonna say.
I always try to have some like cereal bars or something on me. I've always, got a little pally on me with all of my tour management or whatever job I'm doing, needs in there. And I always make sure there's a couple snacks in there too, and maybe like a fresh shirt or something, just in case. You never know. Some tissues is always a good one.
Fresh up.
And hair ties, wildly important. Wildly
Hair
important, because
ties. Yeah, you're
did you know there's a black hole on tour that sucks in hair ties and also guitar picks?
yeah, and moisturizer for me. And I'll always take like, yeah, the wipes are good, but just for my face to like be able to wash my face without using shitty soap. But yeah, that's pretty like
I am
have a
so
choice.
with you.
I left mine on the locker. Yeah, no, skincare is like huge. And I was like, the boys were like, no, I don't do anything. I'm like, you don't like use toner and moisturizer. Like, what does that mean? I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, are you dry?
I mean, maybe they'll come around.
Yeah, they just got that natural thing. They don't have to do anything and they just look fine.
Wild.
Yeah, I'm just jealous because my hair is like super thick. So if I wash my hair on tour, it takes like 2 hours to dry. And Jake will like get out of the shower, it's dry in like 20 minutes and sitting perfectly. And mine is
I
like
think our hair
crazy.
jobs are pretty similar as well. Like, is
Mine's
yeah,
pretty thick.
thick locks. What are you gonna do,
Got similar
Oh
colors
yeah, we do. I
going.
mean, I got some sort of washed out split tie going on here, but yeah, I feel the struggle with the hair. Is I mean, maybe I shouldn't say that, but I really just don't wash it that often, especially on tour, because it's just like, basically I try to do it on off days. That's really what it is. Like, I since I'm usually in charge of accommodation and everything, my thing is throughout the week, we do shows and it's just like the cheap hotel or whatever I can find and like just like a bunch of twin rooms or something. And there's not really ever the time to properly go and wash hair or whatever, because it's just like, go to bed, sleep. I mean, for normal people, not for me, because I usually, yeah, I
Sleep.
mean, I wish I could sleep more. No, I mean, a pretty typical day on tour for me, unfortunately, is like getting back to the hotel at like 2 in the morning and then still sitting around for an hour to like fixing up all of the, I don't know, like merch reports when the merch person messed up, or
True.
fixing up the bookkeeping for that day or whatever for the next day, whatever big problem I need to solve yet again. It's never really that. So, but yeah, for the off days, I always make sure to book sort of a nice Airbnb. Like I try to save throughout the week with cheap hotels and then, always get a nice Airbnb for the off day. And, like for this next run that I'm on, I found us, I think we've got like 2 off days or something in a row, and I found us this Airbnb in a renovated castle in the Peak District in North England, and it's gonna be
Oh
so good. And got a couple other
God,
Airbnbs with
that's
like saunas and whirlpools and stuff like that. So
so cool.
yeah, it's those things. But anyways, yeah, washing hair. I mean, yeah, just trying to do as often as I can, but realistically, it just takes forever, you know?
And hopefully no one like spills beer all through your hair and I'm like, now I have to wash it.
Ugh.
But yeah, I mean, life's pretty good if that's the biggest problem going
Yeah,
on.
fair enough. Hey, by the way, because you mentioned, well, shorts in a way earlier, I was gonna ask, like, you and the what singer in the band were on this campaign for basically sporting shorts or underwear or both. I thought it was incredible either way.
Bonds.
What was going on there?
It was so funny. It was like this mixture of Rolling Stone Australia, Bonds underwear, and this like mental health campaign about men's mental health. So all the photo shoots though were like New Year's Eve party, like hungover, like drinking booze in the pool, and I was like, isn't this for like mental health support? Like, and then it's like they're like, just act like really hungover, like the person taking, they're like, you're really sick, like it was a huge night. I'm like, this is weird and backwards, but okay. Like, it was really funny. They like hired out this crazy house for it. It was like the 70s house. It had like a little like water feature inside that went outside, like under the wall, and then outside it was like really impractical, but yeah, it looked cool. But yeah, that was fun. That was really random. Yeah, they just like asked for me and
That's
Stevie, and
incredible.
they're like,
I mean, in all seriousness, no, I thought it was incredibly cool, particularly, on the topic of men health. And also I've seen Stevie, throughout tours get a lot more into what some people might call sort of like more femme kind of looks, and I massively appreciate that. And I'm sure there's been a lot of flack
definitely.
that he's been getting for that. Particularly coming from sort of, a punk band with, a lot of men in it. I'm sure, audiences are pretty male and, kind of expecting a certain masculinity to come towards them, especially in that genre of music, and I feel like breaking with that inevitably, gets you a lot of yeah, just aggression, or at the very least, yeah, people not appreciating that. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's incredible. And particularly, on the tour with Nathan Gray and Iron Roses, it was all so cool to see. I mean, you know, Nathan's journey is nothing short of incredible, and you know, so proud of them for doing what they do, and the whole band, and you know, seeing that evening compared to, you know, seeing, you know, seeing so many punk shows over the years, and you know, seeing your band change over the years, and seeing Nathan's bands change over the years, I feel like there's so much genuine like progress happening, and I see it all across the board. Maybe you notice as well with the singer in Architects, like that metal band from the UK, going for a lot more femme vibes, and like wearing makeup in all of the press shots, and getting so much hate for that. Actually, it's just makeup, do you know what I mean?
Really?
And like, he got a lot of shit for that, and and you know, Parkway Drive from Australia, you know, doing that incredible documentary and really opening up about their mental health and how they as a band went to therapy to, you know, be good humans and like calling out their own toxic masculinity and stuff like that, like is honestly an incredible moment of progress happening at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I really agree. And like, I feel like just being part of this band, I'm part of this band, I've got to really experience that in a way that's helped me reflect on that misogyny and like move on from it as well, but with people. And it's so real, like amidst a very, like what you just said, like that can be such a bro-y and just bullying, like horrible scene. And it's so important not to like shy away from something and stick around to kind of try to change it, or just keep trying to be yourself. And like, and yeah, just, I'm just so proud of like, it's funny with the guys, cause it's not like they should be praised for it. It's just the way that it should be. But I'm just so happy that they're just naturally like that. It's just very special for me. And I'm just glad that I'm in that kind of a band and I don't have to deal with that on any level.
Fair enough. Did it, I guess, particularly being on a tour like that, being around, you know, multiple people in different journeys of transitions of all kinds, has it sort of been, okay, this is, you know, I was saying this podcast is pretty chill and easygoing, and here we are with deep questions. But did it sort of make you question any of your own kind of gender journey in any way? Like, did it sort of bring up any conversations or questions?
Yeah, like, I feel like Melbourne, especially moving here, just, it's like you don't know what is missing until you're around it, or what you're missing out on, or just being so constricted with gender and it being just projected on me so much, like it mattered to other people so much. And I think you get so used to that so early on that, you know, it starts mattering to you in like certain ways, and you don't know if it's for their reasons or like, because I mean, being self-conscious, I just remember always being very aware of like any kind of, if someone was like, people were noticing me or had a problem with me, so any kind of attention was always just a bit, made me anxious. And I feel like when that attention started, like if women would come to the show when I was 15, like a lot of the time be like older women kind of creeping on me, and I didn't know how to handle that, or people just assuming all the time that I was a lesbian, and I didn't know, really understand my own feelings around sexuality. And that, I feel like the judgment and being attached to something negative just made me push back against that, and almost be like, you know, sexist towards, it wasn't homophobia, it was like sexist towards girls. Even though I was a girl, like I hated being affiliated with something that seemed lame, and I didn't realize it was this total internalized misogyny against myself. It's like women lame when they're trying. I don't want to be seen as like someone who's trying. I want to be good at it. Cause I think when I was little, I was like, I want to be like, I didn't realize, but I think I wanted to be like my dad or like a guy. But I think all I really wanted was just to enjoy myself and be taken seriously, like by other people, everyone wants. So that was really interesting.
Hey, that's incredible. Thank you so much for that insight. And honestly, yeah, that brings us to the end of today's podcast already. Last question for today. You know, you've come a long way in a lot of ways. What would you say to your younger self 15 years ago?
Oh my God. I'd be like, don't smoke as much weed, and let other people in on your musical ideas, but like, don't give a fuck what people think either, and keep writing. And like, when you care too much about what other people think, it just starts stunting your writing. So there's no rules, and that's the magic of good writing, I think.
That's incredible. Hani, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Really, really insightful. And thanks for sharing your journey with a listener. Hope you enjoy it as well. And that's it for today.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
All right. That's it for the Quiz Front podcast. Check back in next week. Yeah, I'm your host, Maya. See you next time. Bye.